My guest today is Monique Butoto. She's originally from the Lakes region of Africa, born in Congo to Rwandan parents and raised in Burundi. She came along to the United States alone to study and arrived in Maine in 2016. She's a senior at the University of Southern Maine and will be graduating from the mechanical engineering program this spring. Welcome, Monique, and thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for coming and inviting me to come here. I feel honored, and I love it.
Oh, good. This is your first time on the air?
This is my first time, so I hope it goes well.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
Maybe you can start with something that's very familiar and comfortable to you and tell us a little bit about your parents. What are they like, and what do they do? Where do they live?
Well, for starters, for now, my mom lives in Rwanda, and my dad, he works in the Congo, but he usually goes home like every once a week or something like that. And my dad is he started his own NGO in the early 90s, and he works closely with the population in the eastern part of the Congo, and they work in fields like medical fields, agriculture and education, health, gender promotion, and all those different cool stuff.
Yeah, for rural development?
For rural development.
Nice.
And then my mom, she's been raising us and my cousins and some of my uncles, but on the side, she would be working on different projects for the family or just businesses. But yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of people to raise. How many people do you think she's had a hand in raising?
It's a lot. I don't know. I can't keep count.
Are we talking 5 or 25?
Yeah, more around 20-something over the years.
That's impressive.
Yeah, some would come for like 3 months. Others would come for 3 years. And yeah.
Well, great. So what kinds of things do you think you learned from your parents that you carry with you today from your childhood? What were their values that still live in you?
I think it's a lot of different values, but the things that strike me the most from my parents are just respect and love for the community. But mainly when I think about my dad, I think hard work, because his life has been split between two countries ever since I was born. Like, we would live in Burundi and he would work in Congo, and he would come for the weekend or twice a week. And now his work is split between three countries because my mom's in Rwanda, so he travels more than 10 hours once a week or twice in like a month. But I would say it's hard work from my dad. And from my mom, I think it's resilience, because when I think about it, it's very silly, but I really believe that if she wanted to move a mountain, she would do just that. Because she's just, I remember when I was growing up and I couldn't get in the school because it was English and I had been studying in French for a long time. She went there and they couldn't like let me get in the school. And she was like, okay, give my daughter a test. And if she doesn't pass the test, then you can tell me that she's not going to be able to get in the school. And so they were like, oh no, she hasn't been studying English for a long time and stuff. But they did give me the test. And I did get I was 3 points below what they were looking for. But because my mom insisted, and because they just didn't think that I would even make that much. And so I got in the school. And ever since then, I know that if I want to do something or get somewhere, that I can. It's not a question if I can. I just have to want it bad, because that's what my mom taught us.
Yeah, she's a pretty fierce advocate.
She is.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
She didn't just raise children, feeding them. She also got them out into the world.
Yeah.
And having been raised between three different countries, speaking Swahili and French with your family and Kinyarwanda with your mom, and now living in yet another culture, speaking English, how do you answer the seemingly simple question, but often confounding question of, where's your home?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest question for me to answer, just because, like I mentioned to you before, when we were in Burundi, I would go to school and, like, you know, the kids would be speaking French or, like, Kirundi and stuff. But I would go back home and I would be speaking Swahili to my brothers and my sisters. But when it comes to my mom, I speak in Swahili and she replies in Kinyarwanda. And then, I don't know, it wasn't until, like, I was 15 that I realized that we were speaking two different languages. Because, I don't know, I understand her. And so, I was living in Burundi, studying there for almost 10 plus years, but during vacation, because my dad was working in Congo, we would be going in Congo because it was 45 minutes from home. And for the great vacations such as summer, we would go to Rwanda. So it was very different. You go back to school and you've had your vacation in Rwanda or Congo and you go back to, like, Burundian friends. It was just confusing. And then getting here, I've lived in North Carolina. I thought I was going to stay there. And then I moved to Ohio. I thought that I was going to stay there. And then I moved to Maine. And so...
Are you thinking you'll stay here?
I don't know. I feel like I'm moving a lot. And so when students are like, oh, I'm going home for spring break. And they're like, oh, where are you going? And then I mentioned George's place, and then they're like, oh, that's where your parents are? I'm like, not really. So where is home? And I'm like, I don't know. So it depends on my mood sometimes. I'm like, that's wherever my mom is, that's my home. Or I'll just say whatever country I feel like saying, whether it's Burundi, because I feel like I have been shaped by a lot of different places. And so I can't just say it's Rwanda or Congo or Burundi. But sometimes I feel like it's within me. I hope that wherever I'll be going, I will be taking home with me. So I'm like, yeah, it's just with me. Wherever I go, it's my home.
It's a surprisingly trick question.
It is.
Sounds like you have some really good answers.
I hope that it's enough. But it's still difficult sometimes.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
You could throw in the I'm a global citizen trick.
Right? I've never thought about that. I should. And sometimes I'm even scared because I'm like, okay, I'm in Maine. I've been here for 2 years. And for these past couple of years, I've been moving around. Like, where am I going to go next? It's
part of the adventure. Part of the mystery.
I hope it's as wonderful as it has been.
I'm glad you've had a good experience. Your parents raised you, your sister, and your two brothers to be strong and courageously strike out into the world to learn and to help others while being financially secure yourself. From whom did you get your awareness about the value of financial independence and how that relates to the empowerment of women?
Well, I think it's from a lot of different people, not just my parents. But first, I would say my dad, because he was raised by a single mother, not a single mother, sorry. His dad died when he was still five, so, and she had like 12 kids. Now they're only four, I think. And so she was able to take them to school, pay for their school fees. And at a time where women were not going to school, my grandmother decided to put her daughters in school and, like, insisted that they get an education. And so my dad was really appreciative of that, and so he passed on those values to us and was like, okay, my daughters have to go to school, some of the best schools. As long as I am here, I'm gonna work hard for that. And so it was from that, the fact that he believed in us, like his daughters, as much as he believed in his sons. And then my mother also, because she pretty much made lemonade out of lemons. Like, she didn't finish her school, but she was a teacher at one point, and she did her business, and she was building any home that we were going to have. Like, she was building that, and yeah, it was great. And then my earliest memory of an independent woman was when I was 3 years old. I went to school, and there's this young girl, she just asked me to play with her, and I was already late for school, so everybody had made friends by then, but she's still my best friend up to this day. She's like my sister. And so the first time that I saw her mother, she had like a black SUV. I had not seen that ever. And she was a big figure in a bank, in a good bank in Burundi. And so I saw that and I was like, oh, I want to be you when I grow up. And it was just the fact that I saw that she was good, even though she was divorced. But she was taking care of her kids. They were in one of the best schools. And I was like, oh, that's really awesome. And so I learned from that, too. And then another thing is seeing how the transition between that happens when some of my aunts would get married, and how, you know, before they get married, I see them as these free and happy, wonderful women. And then after they get married, it's almost like, okay, they're not as free as they were, and they almost have to check in with everything. I was like, I don't want that for myself. And when I think about it, and as Beyonce said, money is power indeed. And the fact that men have money most of the time, it gives them the power to define what is feminine or whatever it is that we are going to have or take as something that we should take. And I was like, no, I actually want to have my own things, do my own things. I don't want to compromise whatever it is that I want just because someone else doesn't think that I deserve it. So I'm going to work hard. And it's just a lot of things that have pushed me to want to be financially secure.
Yeah, makes sense. All in context like that.
Yeah.
Is that what made you want to become a mechanical engineer?
Well, I think that for mechanical engineering, it's funny because I grew up with my brothers and my male cousins, and I would see that as they were growing older, the things that they were trying to do is more towards engineering. And so I was like, oh, okay, since that's what is like considered difficult to do, that is what I want to do. And it was also the fact that there were many people doing mechanical engineering. I was like, okay, why not? And so, yeah, I'm going to do this.
I think you like a challenge.
Yeah, I do. It is bad sometimes.
Really?
It is bad sometimes because, like, I don't want to give up, you know? And sometimes you have to. Well, not for that, but sometimes you have to.
Yeah, sometimes you do. You have to read it as you play it.
Yeah.
So how many women are there in your mechanical engineering class that's going to graduate this spring?
Well, so the classes, the way they are set up, some people can be in their third year and take 4-year classes. But as far as my graduating class, I'm the only female in both mechanical or electrical program. And I was almost going to like give up and be like, I need an extra semester. But just the thought of the fact that anyone would be out there saying, oh, our graduating class was all male. Oh my God. I was like, I gotta wake up and do this thing. Cause
I will integrate and diversify.
Yeah, yeah. Representation does matter. And I don't want any little girl at the graduation or whatever to go through the list of graduating students and not see any female. Cause it's like, oh, this is actually hard. Like, I can't do this. Like, yeah, I'm not giving room for that.
No, you're walking the talk.
Yeah.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You are listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Monique Butoto. Not only is she the sole woman in her graduating class of engineers at USM this spring, but she's also a poet and public speaker who challenges us, all of us, to really consider our values and how we apply them. Monique, you're a member of the Iron Ring, a group of engineers, but engineering is not your only passion. You're a poet and performer of the spoken word as well. I know you like to challenge yourself, obviously, and you'd also like to challenge people through your poetry to examine their biases and open their hearts and minds. I wondered if you might be willing to share an example of your poetry today.
Oh, yeah, sure. So this one, I did this poem when I was at a conference here in Maine, and it's called Asking for a Friend.
Okay, so this is Monique Butoto, Asking for a Friend.
Yes. Word on the street is that there needs to be more regulations when it comes to immigration. Word on the street is that this country belongs to them, that they have the key, that this home is theirs, that only they can decide who can come in, who can get out. And I am just a visitor, and so must remain polite, or else they'll escort me out. But if I may ask, how many more regulations should there be when It takes years of applying and dozens of interviews before one can be potentially considered eligible for the status of immigrant. When it takes tragedy of some sorts, recalling and retelling all the dark realities of one's past, accepting that someone weighs your trauma for the status of immigrant. And if I may ask, how did this country become yours? And if you have the answer, can you share that secret with me? How much did it cost you? How much sweat did it take? Asking for a friend, asking for the 276 schoolgirls who were kidnapped by Boko Haram in Nigeria, asking for the 1,152 victims of rape every single day in Congo, asking for the thousands of migrants turned slaves currently being auctioned in Libya, asking for the millions of lives lost during the genocide in Rwanda, asking for the millions of families who are left behind when their world gets turned upside down, caught up between wars they never asked for. How did this country become your own, and do they stand a chance? Pardon me, but since you've got the key, may I ask you this? How hard is it to manufacture a spirit key, or perhaps a couple of those? And sure, this is your home, but with 47% of it uninhabited, isn't it too big for just yourself? Well, my bad, I apologize, I'm just a visitor, but if I may ask again, how did you get here? Again, asking for a friend, or two. Was there a competition that won you a seat at the table? Did you sing your way into your family's genealogy tree? Did you score an A+ and send the most convincing letter to the universe, asking to be admitted into the American Citizen Society? What did you do that my friends wouldn't have done? What did you give that my friends wouldn't have given? Pardon my intrusion, I know I'm just a visitor, but if I may ask one more time, can you take a moment to find bits of you in my friends? Can you picture what life would look like if the roles were reversed? And if so, how much more regulations would you ask for? Speaking for a friend. There is no free ticket to this country. Speaking for a friend, it takes years to learn how to pronounce certain syllables without sounding un-American. It takes hours of labor to make ends meet. It takes juggling between two, but oftentimes more worlds. It takes being a citizen of the earth. It takes adapting to change without the certainty that you will ever fully adjust. It takes risking it all with no fear for death. For death has become all too familiar by then. It takes every bit of strength, courage, resilience, and faith to be an immigrant in this country. This isn't free.
I was asking for a friend. By Monique Butoto.
Thank you.
Wow. That is a powerful piece. I heard you recite it before a conference last December, and hearing it again, I'm just struck by how you speak for so many immigrants in that.
Yeah, it's just, well, when people say, like, there shouldn't be any more immigrants or illegal immigrants, I'm just struck by it because, like, well, what do you want them to do? Like, what is it that is going to take for them to be able to get here? Because if you think about it, they're not coming because, you know, oh, they just woke up one day and they, you know, want to live in the U.S. Some of them, it's more of there's no other way. It's either they're going to stay in their own country and die eventually, or it's risking it all. Like, sometimes, you know, going across a whole ocean just so they can secure something for their families. And it's like, what do you want them to do? How did you get to become an American citizen, you know? It's like, didn't your grandparents come here through immigration?
And don't we want a country of courageous people?
Yeah.
It's almost a vetting process in and of itself.
There's
how clever
that.
And strategic you must be and how much you must sacrifice to come in the first place.
Yeah,
I certainly meet a new immigrant every week at least, and I am always struck by the courage and the vision and the willingness to work hard.
Yeah, because oftentimes they are very grateful, and then people like Steve Jobs, like, they're very innovative, and he brought something to the U.S., and although not all immigrants are going to bring like Google to the U.S., but they all are bringing something. And, you know, like I said, the sun is there for everybody. You know, the U.S. is going to expand and there's going to be enough room for all these good things. So it's not like they're going to drain the resources in the U.S. They're going to be bringing something to the U.S.
Value added.
Yeah.
So why didn't you study writing, Monique? You have a blog, and you've been speaking publicly in New York City and locally at this immigration conference. And here on the air with me today. Did you ever consider writing as a career?
I did. Like, ever since I was 8 years old, I always said, oh, I want to write. I want to be a writer. But then it's like, you can't make a living as a writer. And, you know, my parents, with all the sacrifices that they have made, I don't think that they would have wanted to, like, spend that much money on a career that was not going to secure my future as, you know, as much as other careers. And so I thought about it, but hopefully in the future I can do a master's in fine arts and creative writing, and I can keep on doing what I love to do, which is write.
It's beautiful. I think your voice is loud and clear, and you know what your heart has to say, and you say it beautifully in English through your poetry.
Yeah, I'm very glad that I was able to learn English at an early age, although it's not perfect. But I still struggle not knowing what word goes with what feeling, but I try, and every day I get better.
Yeah, I think you're doing pretty darn well.
Thank you.
I know you care very much about what you're witnessing in the immigration debate today. I loved what you said earlier about there's enough sun for everybody. And that sounds like it might be a song from a future poem. Do you have another poem that you might like to share with us today briefly?
Yes. So this one is more on like women and like what they go through. And it's called 15. We sat at the balcony. She was covered from head to toe. I asked, "What's your story?" She started talking about a little girl, four boys searching for gold in her country. Her country is only 15 years old. Rape, abduction, forced marriage, ukuombora, she calls it in our mother tongue. Men don't marry girls like her. They are deemed unlovable, less pure, not fit. She says she won 15 other girls. It's been 15 years now, she gave up. No wonder she talks in the third person. Fiction appeals to any audience. It is over there. I almost choke asking, but what's your story? How lovable, how pure, how fit. Dear women of the Congo, I'll speak to you, I'll speak of you, I'll speak for you. There is nothing pretty about exposing my sister's nightmares and my mother's secrets. There is nothing lovely about tracing my complexity back to your history. Dear women of the Congo, even when you give birth to foreigners, we wear the same bruised skin at the age of 15. And this was from a young woman that I met, and she had been assaulted, and I dedicated this to her, and I just love hearing people's stories, whether they're immigrants or just normal people, and I hope that I can make art out of it.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing her and hearing her and sharing her voice with us through your poem called 15.
Thank you.
Monique, tell us about your dreams. Where do you go from here after graduation? I know that's always a mean question to ask to seniors of high school or college, but I'd love to know what your hopes and dreams look like for about 5 years from now.
Well, hopefully I get on that stage, I collect my diploma, and I hope that I get an internship or a job. And so 5 years from now, I hope that I have my own place and that I'm secure financially, and that I can be able to do what I love, which is writing. I have a lot of ideas for like stories and like novels and stuff like that. So I hope in 5 years at least I have one novel out. And most importantly, I hope that I love wherever it is that I will be, and that I will feel like home in 5 years.
That's pretty great. And we know that wherever you are, you will be home, because you take that with you in your heart.
I hope by then I'll be confident in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Monique, you are delightful to be around.
Thank
you. So bright, clear-spoken, and broad-thinking. I wish you every happiness, and may your words truly change the world.
I hope so, too. Thank you for letting me come here and do my little thing here. I was really happy. I was like, oh, my God, I have to make sure that it's perfect and everything. I'm really honored, and thank you so much for this.
You're welcome, and just be assured you don't ever have to be perfect. You're pretty great the way you are.
That's true. That's true. Thanks for reminding me that. And I'm glad you give voice to like a lot of different people that might not have the space to express themselves. So thank you for doing that for this community and the world, really.
Oh, that's very nice. You're quite welcome. It's my joy. And I would invite listeners, if they like listening to this program and they're foreign born from any country, they're welcome to contact me. And I would happily arrange a date to hear their story on the air.
It's awesome. She's really awesome. I'm just saying. Just come over.
Thank you all for listening. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Monique has selected for us. Can you tell us about why you chose Andrea Day's Rise Up to wrap things up today?
Yes. So the song is more about, you know, I'll rise up no matter what happens. Like, I rise up, and I feel like this, my last semester in school and really where I'm at with life, it's more of I have to not give up. And this song just lifts my spirit, and I'm like, I'll rise up no matter what happens. We'll make it. So I hope anybody who listens to it, they take that from the song. And if you're feeling down, or if you're feeling like, oh, this is so hard, like, just you'll rise up eventually.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we can walk it out. Move mountains, we can walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it 1,000 times again. And I'll rise up, I like the waves. I'll rise up, in spite of the ache. I'll rise up, and I'll do it 1,000 silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet. Move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it 1,000 times again. With you, with you, with you, with you. For that we have each other. I will rise 1,000 times again.